Hello, everybody, and welcome to Diffuse Launch with Kenny Estes and Isla Graham. We do the Diffuse Launch events shortly after we launch a new fund, just to give everybody in the Diffuse community a chance to learn a little bit about what the fund is up to. Today's Diffuse Launch event is all about MaxFi, and our moderator, Mr. Brian Walls, will be asking some questions from the audience as we go. So hopefully this gives you a chance to learn a little bit about what we're up to. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. This is not a Diffuse Tap, contrary to popular belief, but nice to see you all this morning. Let me get my... We're going to do it a little bit differently. You get to see Mini-Me today down here in the corner, which is just so exciting. So as usual, we'll briefly... Oh, here's a legal notice. I'm going to leave it up for about 2 seconds and read fast. And moving on. Great. So the agenda for the day, so you all know what to expect. We try to keep it as similar to the Fuse Tap. The networking, you had a little bit of that. And then we're going to briefly talk about the fund we just launched, the Fuse Digital MaxFi, just so you have a little bit of color. And then our lovely Mr. Brian Walls, who many of you run into multiple times at this point, because he is a true Diffuse friend. We'll grill Isla and myself all about what's going on, and then try to MC a little bit questions from the audience. And then we're going to do a quick wrap. So we'll try to be right at half an hour. Briefly, what is Diffuse? Isla and I are the co-founders of Diffuse. I work for Isla, but I also talk more, so it's okay. And so Diffuse is an alternative fund incubator. We try to find more high alpha, non-correlated investment strategies, and we turn them into institutional funds. So we're primarily focused on digital assets, not exclusively, but primarily this year especially. So we now have 3 live funds, including the one we're about to talk to you about. Team's getting bigger, actually. I guess I'm the CEO. Isla is COO. She makes everybody works. Jens and Eric are kind of our tech leads, tech advisors, and they make sure that they have a lot of technology, trading, infrastructure experience. And then we have Ren, who's in the room now, and Eves. Ren is just amazing at finding new opportunities, and Eves is great at just making it all run smoothly. So quick, some context for those of you who weren't on the last one, decentralized finance or DeFi. The high level ambition is to take all of the stuff that financial institutions do and do them without the institution bit, which means that you get a lot of efficiencies and it's just a lot, in theory, better. That's a very lofty ambition, but that market is exploding. And if they can deliver on 5% of their vision, huge market. This chart really shows it. Beginning of the year, last year, it was effectively zero. And now there's $228 billion invested into various DeFi protocols. The one that we focus on, we'll keep it high level, is market making. So we provide liquidity into decentralized market making pools to receive transaction revenue. And we do that in a specific way we call pool hunting. So when a new market making protocol launches, the yields are silly high as a general rule, because the yields are determined by the size of the pool. And when it's a small pool and we're basically the only participant in there, we collect the lion's share of the transaction revenue for facilitating the conversion between two currencies. So when we say pool hunting or pool surfing, depending on when you catch us, basically, we're coming in on day one, getting these really high yields. That decays over time as more people follow us into the pool. And then at any point in time, we'll have 10, 15, 20 pools we're in. And we kind of ride the decay down and then reallocate into a new pool. So it creates this concept of just continually redeploying into the most lucrative pools and kind of hunting or surfing the yield. So that's the core strategy of what we do, both for this and for our other fund, MaxFi. The difference is in this one, the assets we invest with, if you think of the principal we're investing into these pools, it's the blue chip cryptos. So in all cases, they are the gas tokens. So Bitcoin, Ethereum, FTM is Phantoms, AVAX is Avalanches, Matic is Polygons. So we have overall crypto exposure, but we juice that with the yield from investing into these market making pools. So this is what we do. So we're looking to maximize DeFi returns. So if you want to be long crypto, long beta, to use the traditional finance terms, but kind of juice that with the yield, that's what we're about. And we do that with these four pillars here: the team, the process, the infrastructure, and the service providers. Team, we've already talked about. My background's a lot of high frequency trading. Started doing that when I was 18. I was really good at commercialization operation. We have really senior tech folk, and then folks who are up and coming and hungry, like our favorite Ren Yu there. The process is finding these pools. It's a very manual process. It's going to Telegram, Discord. It's just looking and finding, underwriting them, make sure they're reasonably safe, diversifying them, managing our risk. All of those pieces go into our investing process to create relatively consistent returns. The infrastructure, right now it's largely manual. We're in the process of automating the whole tech stack to minimize our exposure at any particular point in time to kind of each of these pools when they pay their interest. It's in a particular coin. We try to minimize our exposure and really just have the only risk profile being on the beta, the blue chip cryptos. Service providers, again, the whole mission of Diffuse is to be a more institutional fund vehicle or investment vehicle incubator. So we work with, you know, pretty legitimate service providers, Cedrania for fund admin, Kleinberg Kaplan is a tier one or tier two Wall Street fund formation firm. This is an audited fund, and you know, the signature bank are the partners. The investment terms, it's just a standard Delaware limited partnership, $250,000 minimum. It's a 2 in 20, and we redeem every month, but it's a 90-day notice period because this is a very volatile fund, but it fits in nicely with our other like StableFi. It's not volatile at all. So it allows people to really tailor their risk profile. And that is the end of my monologue. So over to you, Mr. Brian Walls, partner at Bridge Alternatives.
Well, excellent, excellent, excellent. Thank you, Kenny. I have to say, we have already some questions in the queue, some that are going to preempt my questions. You know, I kind of have like that no short-term memory. So every time we do this, it's like fresh and I can ask these questions like the idiot I am. But this time we even have the questions coming right from the audience. I'm going to go to the first one that was from Henry. That kind of is always my first question too is, why do these yields exist? I mean at the base level, like, you know, StableFi has some yield and then this has some yield, but then 300%. I mean, you know, we're looking in traditional markets, the difference between treasuries and, you know, junk is like 300 basis points, right? So why would these yields exist, in this space?
Sure. Yeah. So it's super inefficient out there. I don't know how it. So my background was high frequency trading. I started when I was 18. I didn't know what I was doing. I really don't want to know now, let's be honest. But the back then, like traditional finance, it felt like I was held together by duct tape and barbed wire, right? It was messy. The technical infrastructure wasn't great. In DeFi, we have 20 of these new pools launching every single day. They're copy and paste, but like the number of just like one of the pools to stake, for some reason, you had to add 7 zeros at the beginning of it. I just manually had to punch in 7 zeros for some reason, right? And it's really inefficient. There's no custodian that can actually support this, right? Nobody has a trust license. They're relatively small pools. So that's why we have to have so many of them at any particular point in time. That makes opportunity because institutional allocators, they can't be in there. You can't go in there without a qualified custodian to start with, and one doesn't exist, but you definitely can't go in with the check sizes that they need to write. So it creates, and this is really what Diffuse we like to try to find, are these, we want to go where it's messy, where it's not fully developed, and just get our hands dirty, understand it, and find a strategy that we are one of the few people on the planet who actually can develop and create that strategy. So these yields are silly, and legitimately so, especially when you compare traditional finance. But it's as retail can get. We're kind of the first and one of the few institutional players out there. And Henry, to your point, that 300%+ APR, that's day one. That decays. But even in the decayed state, like the baseline is like 25 to 30% APR. It's just bananas out there. And there's so much opportunity, but it is so manual. Like Ren, I mean, his primary focus is just continually scouring Telegram and RugDoc and Discord and Twitter to find these pools so that we can be there on day one to take advantage of these opportunities.
Gotcha. So really, like, when I think about the fees that we pay for this, because some of it, obviously, it's decentralized and you could, I could do it myself in theory. It's just that, you know, this is one of those true situations, like unlike a equity hedge fund or something, like, you know, the actual work of doing it is laborious and takes expertise.
Totally. Yeah. It's, okay. It's, yeah. I mean, I'm just to execute the trades. It takes 2 hours every morning just to do the trades. Once we've done the research and figured out what we want to do, just moving things around. And for better or worse, like these pools are so new, by the time you get a technical integration to automate the whole thing, the yield's gone, right? So like the Wi-Fis of the world and the yield farming aggregators that exist, like that, it's just, you, by the time they get to it, it's a mature pool.
Okay, well, that leads actually to another question Adam had put in, which was, do you leverage and at all, and are you yield farming at all?
I would say what we would, these terms are ambiguous. I would say what we do would definitely be considered yield farming. So we're going out to the pools, we're staking.
Do you use leverage?
We don't right now. Now, we probably will at some point put some pretty conservative leverage on, but subject to all sorts of, like, you know, collateralizations and things like that. But right now we're no leverage.
Tomer asked a question. Do you participate in pools only or in farms? I'm not, and I don't really know what that distinction is.
Again, it's a little bit ambiguous. So there's pools are like you have a pool where it's just one asset. So, you know, if it's just Bitcoin, right? So you just put the one asset in there and then behind the scenes, they take that out and they invest it into their various farms based on whatever algorithm they have. The farms are directly, this is a pool, a farm that facilitates conversion between Bitcoin and Ethereum, right? Gotcha. And so we do both, but in either event, in the pool, it's just one asset. So it's only has to be one of those blue chips. In the farm scenario, both sides have to be a blue chip. So we wouldn't do like a Bitcoin and a stable coin. That would just never be something we invest in directly. There's some ways you could potentially get the exposure, but it'd be, have to be like Bitcoin and Ethereum or Bitcoin AVAX or something like that.
Okay. So there's another general question, which I think is interesting. It's been asked a few different ways, is you mentioned you're long the blue chips, the Bitcoin, the Ethereum, Matic, and all these good names and big, you know, well-established protocols. And then you're participating in the AMMs. Do you hedge them at all? Do you say, listen, we're going to hedge out the beta of these blue chips and we're just going to provide you the net yield?
So, and this is just it's a thing that it's our theory and it's a diffuse thing. And I don't know that it's the right thing, but it's what we're doing. Our idea is every single one of these funds we launch, we want to have a very tight risk profile. You know exactly what you're underwriting, right? So if you want to have, so then you can come over to the top and create a portfolio according to your desires. So this is a pure beta vehicle. There's no hedging at all, right? You will have the beta exposure plus the yield. That's okay. We have other funds like StableFi, that's market neutral. So the idea is if you want to have a blend according to your risk profile, you choose how you want to do the allocations. So you can say, I want to do 20% in MaxFi with the super long beta exposure and 80% in the market neutral. And so then that way, because it's such a clear profile and you're not relying on us to kind of minimize the volatility, you know what you're in for and you're not going to be subject to our hedging. It's more of a just pick how you want to allocate across the funds. So the long story, the short answer is no, we don't do any hedging on the beta.
Okay. Because that's, I think that's an interesting question, right? Is like, I could see that some might express the strategy where, oh, I'm long Bitcoin and Ethereum and there are perpetual futures on this and I could take out the beta and then it's just a net absolute return strategy. You're kind of more in the camp of, and I don't think, and so how do you think how much of the return is going to be the beta versus the farming?
Lately,
is
there any way to on the beta, estimate? Like, a lot of there's no way to estimate. Like, fair enough, I mean, we're at all-time highs, right? Like, that's a lot of beta, right? But the interest we think long-term will kind of juice that. But if you're asking me to predict like where we think the crypto market's going to go, like, I don't know. That's like, this is appropriate for people who have a very long-term vision will deliver that product. Personally, I try not to kind of like you know, notoriously my my crystal ball is not very good at these sorts of things.
So I'm going to ask you a question about investment process, because there's a couple of other questions in here that I have to really think about before I express them. They're good ones. So could you walk through how do you scan the universe of pools? How do you evaluate them for risk versus return? You know, I get, and I think most people might get, that the reason they're paying the high awards in the first few days, it's a customer acquisition strategy, right? It's like, we need to get this pool big as fast as possible. We're distributing a fixed amount of tokens per day. So the smaller this pool is, the bigger your return on, you know, on investment is. So I think that we kind of get, but I think it would be helpful because I'd like to, you know, you're talking about different tokens, right? And how do you allocate that out? Is it all in Bitcoin? Is it all in Matic kind of thing? Like, what's your limits? And then from terms of the pools, how do you investigate them? How do you assess them? And how do you allocate?
Yeah, okay, that's a long answer. I'll try to keep it as brief as humanly possible. So Ren is really good at finding pools, and it's all manual, right? It's just manual. And he does a great job of it, of like, okay, what's the yield today? What's the size of the pool? If we drop it in here, splash the pot, to use the poker term, like, what happens to the yield? Because if we triple the AUM, we're going to third the APR.
Yes.
And all of that goes into an optimization engine that I wrote. So when he's doing his underwriting, he's looking at what's the yield, what's the TVL. We always do a test transaction, which is something that catches so many people out. Like, oh, I'm on the wrong contract, or oh, look at that thing. That's just a fraud, right? Like, put in 10 bucks, take out the 10 bucks. Like, super simple, but also takes a lot of the risk off the table. And just make sure. And then there's audits, and third, like Rugdoc or Paladin. There's these folks that go through and look at the code of these smart contracts to see if they feel the principle is at risk. What's called it's a hack or a hard rug pull, where somebody can get in there and steal the actual principle you invest in the pools. So we will not invest in anything if there is even a hint of a risk of our principle getting stolen. Right? That's just no exploit. No. We're going to get it wrong. We will eventually get that wrong, which is where the diversification comes in, right? 10, 15, 20 pools. So if one of them has a, you know, 10%, 20% hack, the actual principal that's going to be lost isn't, you know, enormous relative to the type of return we're talking about. So we took the underwriting first, look at the yield, look at the TVL, do it every day. We're looking to automate that to go about every hour, run it through the optimization engine to figure out how to maximize our income over a particular period of time. And as part of that optimization engine, we have a heuristic distribution we fit around the decay. So, you know, 300% on day one, you know, on day four, what do we think it's going to be? And it's a guess, right? It's a guess, and it's a heuristic, and it's not clean. It's not right by any stretch, but it at least kind of gives us a reasonable approach to it. And then the other piece is the principal we invest is these blue chips. The interest is always paid in the protocol or pool that we're investing with token. Now those tokens, I call them crappy little tokens. I really shouldn't, but I do. They almost always go to zero. So what we do is at least every day, we go out, we harvest all of the interest that we've received and convert it back into the blue chip and compound it into the pools. So even if one of these tokens goes to zero overnight, we'll lose like one day's worth of interest in one of the pools we're invested in. Again, that just adds more to the manual element to what we're doing. Yeah. But we think it's key part of the strategy.
That's interesting. And again, that's a lot of work. And then what about the concentration risk? Like, are you kind of saying, oh, that's too much Matic and that's, you know, not enough Bitcoin? Or are you just letting kind of the opportunities generally dictate what the positions are?
It's more driven by yield, candidly. As we get more sophisticated and bigger, like we probably put risk profiles around it and try to figure out, okay, we want to minimize exposure. But again, like my crystal ball ain't great. So do we want to have more Ethereum versus Bitcoin, or like, it's kind of like, I don't know.
I kind of don't want to make in those bets, right? It's like, I'm not investing in a, like a hedge fund that says, we know which crypto is going up. You're taking a different approach, which is we're going to be long the beta of the highest yielding stuff.
Right. And theoretically, because we're going into new chains and we're always adding new chains. Like I think we added Phantom maybe a week or two ago. and that adds new gas token. So this is going to be more alternative coin exposure than Bitcoin and Ethereum. Paul, who's here, he asked a question. I need to give him a proper answer. Like, of the five, I think we're tokens in right now, what is the actual distribution between the three? It's certainly not market cap weighted to Bitcoin and Ethereum. It's a lot more heavily weighted to the smaller, more up and coming chains, which generally I think is the right exposure. I think you want to have more exposure to the lower stuff that hasn't really matured fully yet. But again, who knows?
Let's take a shift here. I want to ask the regulatory framework here. So, you know, we see hearings and we hear the talk of, you know, the banks are pushing back on DeFi and the Fed and the Treasury and everything. If I make an investment in the fund and they change the regulatory framework, how does that affect the returns and how does that affect my standing?
Yeah, we pay lawyers a lot. We just do. And a lot of it is exactly that, right? Like, this is gray area, right? So we took we are going to be as compliant as humanly possible. We're a Reg D fund. We're a 506C even, which is the high, as far as Reg D funds. That's the one that you have to have accreditation check. And it's the most arduous in terms of like onboarding investors and things like that. But because we're onshore, so we're not doing things in the Cayman, which theoretically means that we're going to have more compliance upkeep. Long term, I think that's going to be the right approach, but that also gives us a ton of flexibility as far as what we actually invest in. So it's our attorney's opinion that, you know, as we're doing these pools, we as a fund are not at risk for that, right? Like, some of these pools, if they're, you know, onshore and they're not doing AML KYC the way they should have, like the SEC might go after them, but it wouldn't be going after us. So the risk is not that, hey, they're gonna get this massive fund. The risk is probably not we're going to give a massive fine, because who knows what things can change, but it's our lawyer's opinion that that's not a major risk at all. It's more of a, if this whole thing fizzles and the SEC cracks down, no longer we can trade in the US, the fund fizzles. We return everybody's capital and move on with their lives.
Gotcha. Okay. What new chains out there do you think are like interesting? I mean, there's Algorand, somebody mentioned, Polkadot, Solana, like, you know, as you look at the non-Ethereum stuff, like what chains do you think might, do you see more opportunities coming, I guess is the first part. And if so, which chains do you expect them to be on?
So we're really driven by yield, right? And that's not the same as far as which chain we think will be long-term more successful, because Solana is white hot right now, right? We're not trading on Solana. And the reason is because it's so hot and the DeFi is so large, we just haven't seen the type of yield opportunities you see on the likes of the Polygon, which is, you know, it's a older, I mean, older is very relative in this space.
6 months older.
Yeah, exactly. It's an older chain, like, you know, Binance Smart Chain, we're not on anymore. So right now, we're only on like three, but we're always looking for interesting opportunities on other chains. And fortunately, and Brett's here, so this is a nice little plug for him. We use a fund admin called Sudrania, who is super comfortable with being early adopters on to new blockchains. So as soon as we find the new chain, like, we need to go over there, it's pretty much as easy as, hey, here's the new explorer for this chain. Here's our wallet address. We're now trading over there, and they'll do the actual accounting, which allows us to be super nimble.
Gotcha. So you look at, let's say, like you said, Solana's white hot and there's tons of projects launching, but you're still looking at it from the standpoint of, yeah, but they seem like to be really well funded and there's no big yield opportunity. I'm still going to be looking in the places where there's the big yield opportunities.
Right, exactly. And that, I mean, I like Solana. Like, I love the technology. I like the vision that they have, all of that. So I'm not saying that I think Solana's not going to be long-term successful. It's just not worth finding yield.
All right, we're right up against 1029. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you think I should have? Oh, I have so are there any similar products? So MaxFi is out there. You know, do you see, I mean, we just saw the Bito list, right? There's a Bitcoin ETF now, but is there anything that people can just buy a public fund or an ETF that does this strategy?
Definitely not. And that is entirely custody. Like, the stuff that we use, We're onboarding.
So don't hold your breath either. Because the custody is not going to work.
Yeah. Even if you go to like a Grayscale, they have like a DeFi fund, right? A DeFi index fund. They're just buying the tokens of like Solana. So they're not actually doing the staking that we're doing. So all of that, you know, 30 whatever percent return that you get on top of the beta appreciation, like they're just leaving that on the table, understandably, because you can't have a custodian. So you can't have institutional money invested in there right now.
Okay, we're right at 10:30.
That was unfortunate. I really should not have talked so much there. Was there anything talking points that you wanted to hit on there?
No, I think we covered it all. But the good thing is that after this, you'll get a little note from us. If you do reply, you can ask a bunch more questions. We'll get back to you right away. And we're happy to schedule individual Zoom calls for anyone that has more questions that we can dig into.
Brian, anything else on your end?
I think you hit all the big ones. I like the way it jumps now to the Telegram group, because that allows a lot of dialogue. So that's what I would encourage people is I like after this call now, we jump to Telegram and people can keep asking questions. All right, guys.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for emceeing and asking the hard questions. And everybody, thanks for showing up. And looking forward to keep the conversation going.
You've been listening to Diffuse Tap with Isla Krem and Kenny Estes. If you enjoyed these conversations, join us for the live version every Wednesday-ish at 10 a.m. Central. In addition to the Fireside Chat, the live event features three rounds of networking in small groups with alternative fund GPs, LPs, and supporters from around the world. Log on to www.diffusefunds.com to register yourself now.